Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 53 degrees under mostly cloudy skies. Today is Monday, August 27th, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. Sitkins had a chance to share their ideas for a Mount Edgecombe High School Aquatic Center last Friday. The legislature has appropriated $20 million toward designing and building the project. It will be part of the Edgecombe campus, and the school will pay to maintain and operate the facility. Brian Meissner of EC Higher Architecture discussed early plans with 40 to 50 people attending an open house at the Edgecombe gym. He says the pool will try to meet a variety of needs.
There's a training need, and that has to do with the Mount Edgecombe physical education part of it, lifeguard training, the others, as well as the troopers. There's a competition need, and that is a swim team type of thing, and maybe a diving component to that. We don't really know that yet. And then there's the recreation thing.
Meissner says many variables are being considered. One is the length and number of lanes. Swim coach Suha Tokman argued for a large 50-meter competition-centered pool.
I like to see 10 lanes, not 8 lanes, because if you built an 8-lane 50-meter pool, and you might as well not even build it. With an 8-lane pool, you can't really host a serious swim meet here.
Meissner says the pool will be expensive. One state estimate for a $17 million facility suggests maintenance and operations could cost the school more than $300,000 a year. He says revenues from swimmers and user groups will not cover much of that operational cost. Meissner brought drawings showing four locations under consideration. We have photos of them on our website, kcaw.org. Sitka officials are dropping plans for a controversial quarry near Sitka's golf course, at least for now. Planning Director Wells Williams says the city has sent a note to interested parties telling them the proposed Granite Creek quarry is indefinitely delayed. He says internal discussions brought up a number of issues he wouldn't elaborate. Paperwork provided for last week's Planning Commission meeting said the quarry would provide rock and gravel needed for local projects. It stated the city could face a shortage of the materials. Some neighbors, including the Sea Mountain Golf Course, objected to the location. They said quarry operations could lead to noise, traffic, and drainage problems. Some also expressed concern about mining a mountaintop. The 10-acre quarry area is near Granite Creek Road, less than a mile from Halibut Point Road. Officials have discussed other possible locations. Williams said none have been chosen. Another hearing was scheduled for September 4th. It's now off the Planning Commission's agenda. The Forest Service is seeking public comment on a proposal to close a dozen recreation cabins on the Tongass National Forest. All of the cabins are located in wilderness areas. Sue Jennings, a recreation planner with the Forest Service, says there are almost 150 recreation cabins on the Tongass, and they are getting increasingly more expensive to maintain.
As you know, funds are going down, the budget's lower, and so we have to figure out how to maintain the cabins with what we have, and that's based on how people pay cabin fees to stay at the cabin, how much money we get through Congress. And so the lower-use cabins, we're looking at whether or not to remove them, or some of them we're talking about converting them to shelters as opposed to cabins, because shelters are less to maintain.
Cabins being considered for conversion into survival shelters are Big Goat on the Ketchikan Misty District, Distin Lake on Admiralty Island, and Harvey Lake near Petersburg. Nine other recreation cabins are slated for complete removal. Jennings says many are dilapidated and have not been used for years.
One was hit by a landslide. It's really not usable anymore, so that's one of the cabins on our list. Another cabin has just fallen down because it's so old.
Jennings says two of the cabins that are falling down are Maksutov Lake and Rezanov Lake near Sitka. She says those have not been used in 20 years. Square Lake Cabin near Yakutat is also proposed for removal. So are cabins in Ketchikan, Thorn Bay, Wrangell, and Petersburg districts. Jennings says the selections were made based on maintenance needs and the level of public use. She says the Forest Service is interested in hearing from the public on the proposed closures.
We truly want your comments. If there's a cabin on the list that you say, oh no, that's my favorite cabin, let me know that. These the right 12, or should we retain some of them because they're a place where you think, well, maybe we can get more use, or maybe there's something else we could do there to get more people to go to these cabins and pay the fees so that we can afford to maintain them.
Jennings anticipates the notice of public comment will be in newspapers within the next week or two. Ballot Measure 2 is on tomorrow's primary election ballot. It is the most hotly contested initiative Alaska voters have faced in recent memory. In the last 5 years, only the 2008 Clean Water Initiative had more spending for and against. That was the measure aimed at stopping development of the proposed Pebble Mine. As with that initiative, industry groups are lining up against Measure 2, outspending proponents by more than 7-1. If approved, Measure 2 would restore the Alaska Coastal Management Program. It is a federally funded state agency that operated smoothly and with little fanfare for more than 30 years before legislators and the Parnell administration failed to reach a deal to reauthorize it in 2011. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
If Measure 2 opponents are to be believed, coastal management is actually a good thing. The one-time head of the state's coastal management review process, Kurt Fredrickson, is now the public face of the Vote No on 2 campaign.
Whether it's called coastal management or some other form, clearly I believe Alaska needs a stronger voice in federal decision-making. They're a dominant force in Alaska, and we have to have a stronger voice. And the decisions they make, whether it's to protect or develop Alaska's resources.
But speaking to the Juneau Chamber of Commerce in June, Fredrickson said Measure 2 would be a step backward for the state. The Alaska Coastal Management Program changed significantly during the Frank Murkowski administration. Some say it was gutted. Others say reformed. Fredrickson, who also served as Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner under Murkowski, falls into the latter category.
And the previous coastal management program, which existed for 35 years, there were lots of debates over the years, and those debates got resolved. They got settled, and they got reflected in the law. We're going back to a time when those debates are going to just kind of come up again.
He thinks that will lead to lawsuits, confusion, and project delays. But Ballot Measure 2 supporters say those are exactly the kind of things the initiative would help avoid. It restores the Coastal Management Program's coordinated review process, which streamlines the coastal development permitting activities of various local, state, and federal agencies. The Alaska Sea Party sponsored Measure 2. At a recent news conference, Sea Party co-chair Terza Tippin-Poe gave an example of the regulatory morass developers face without coastal management.
Say it's a dock. You're going to have to take that project proposal and the list of permits that you need for that project, and you're going to have to go to the Department of Natural Resources, the Department of Environmental Conservation, Fish and Game, Corps of Engineers, and walk that from agency to agency.
That may not be a big deal to large corporations, but Poe says it hurts small businesses and individuals. Measure 2 also would reestablish an Alaska Coastal Policy Board, part of the program scrapped by Murkowski. The board would be comprised of 4 state commissioners and 9 public members to be nominated by local communities and appointed by the governor. The board would review district management plans developed by coastal communities to ensure they comply with state regulations. Poe says it would not have veto power over projects, as claimed by some opponents of the initiative.
One of the big things that this coastal management program accomplishes is that you actually identify, a project proponent can identify issues early in the process and then go and talk with communities and get their input on how to work towards a successful development project.
The reestablishment of a coastal policy board ultimately doomed efforts by state lawmakers to reauthorize the coastal management program during the past 2 legislative sessions. Some Measure 2 opponents think the legislature should try again, saying the issue is too complicated to be decided by voters. Mike Satry is executive director of the Council of Alaska Producers, a trade group representing large-scale mines and mining projects in the state.
Something as complex as this should really be worked on in the legislative process so that we can develop something that everybody will agree to. But I get very scared about something that supporters admit has problems and simply want it to pass so they can quote-unquote fix it later.
Measure 2 supporters concede it might not be perfect for everyone, and they admit it leans toward giving communities more of a voice in coastal management. Charlotte Brower is mayor of the North Slope Borough, the Sea Party's top financial backer. With exploratory drilling in the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas imminent, Brower says the state can't afford to delay restarting the program, and she insists it's not about stopping development.
We are not in a position to stop offshore development or inshore development. It's there. We just need to make sure that we have a seat on the table and talk about this issue that is going to impact our residents. It's coming.
Alaska is the only coastal state without a federally approved coastal management program. The 1972 Coastal Zone Management Act allows states that opt for a program to get some federal funding. Industry opponents of the ballot measure, including the big three oil producers and several mining companies in Alaska, have donated more than $1.5 million to the Vote No on 2 campaign. The Alaska Sea Party has raised just over $204,000, mostly from coastal communities and individuals. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Again, primary election day is tomorrow in Alaska. In Sitka, all precincts have been consolidated into Harrigan Centennial Hall. Officials at Alaska's Denali National Park say about 200 square miles of backcountry terrain where a solo California hiker was mauled to death by a grizzly bear remain closed as investigators continue to piece together what happened. Park officials said Sunday rangers will try to recreate steps taken by 49-year-old Richard White of San Diego before he was attacked Friday afternoon near the Tokalot River. Officials say White photographed the male bear for at least 8 minutes from a distance of 50 to 100 yards. A state trooper fatally shot the bear on Saturday. So in weather forecast today for Sitka and Port Alexander, calls for increasing clouds, chance of rain this afternoon, highs around 60, west winds 5 to 15 miles per hour, shifting to the south late in the afternoon. This is Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka.